Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into this lovely movie that we've been watching for the past couple of months. Dune, that one.
Bro, you're throwing me off with all of these changes that you make to these.
I do it because I love seeing your uncomfortable face.
I don't like it. Too much change.
The tism's coming out.
Yeah, just a little bit.
We are here to talk about 1 hour 7 to 1 hour 8. I really got to start marking these as like 67 to 68. Yeah. I'm not good at math. So this minute starts with a scolding and ends with a prayer.
That's almost the exact notes that I had.
Yeah, what'd you have? What'd you have? Because give it a second. I can cut around which one everyone's better.
Mine was, it starts with a yell and ends with a prayer.
Oh, lovely. All right, great.
I like his.
Yeah.
The scolding in question.
The Catholic raised child in me understands that one way too much.
The scolding in question is Gurney going, "What are you doing?" to Paul.
Oh, that's a good Gurney.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I've been practicing.
Yeah.
As he's being ushered back to the ship, he goes, "What's the matter with you? Come on, let's go."
And they don't really have much time to go anywhere because, you know, Paul, you know, seems to very quickly get his faculties again. And then suddenly,
is he though?
He starts at least running. But then they start
struggle to run.
Yeah. Well, they're struggling even more because they start to sink into the sand a little bit.
Yeah.
Shai Hulud is here.
Your boy's here.
Hey, it's me, your boy, the worm. So Shai Hulud, we see, you know, Paul and Gurney both kind of trip from the earthquakes and everything. We see, you know, the camera behind them is showing just this giant mass of sand right there next to them. And then for a very brief moment, we see the actual skin of Shai Hulud begin to kind of like dive down back into the sand. Almost like you ever see like a whale, going back to your whale analogy from last episode, kind of do the thing where they, you know, go down and then they come up and capture all the like small fish and stuff at the surface of the water and they don't have anywhere to go. So the worms obviously being very influenced by whale movements and everything. We see that same exact thing happen here. What I think is really cool though, and I've talked about these on other episodes, but in the extras on Apple TV, they talk about, there's like a whole, you know, section of an extra or an extra itself where they talk about like all the work that they did to look at how sand behaves to different external stimulus. And we see a moment where like the sand is kind of like rippling almost like water whenever you like put sound waves against it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Or any kind of vibrational energy. The sand is doing the same thing. It's got this really cool, like almost pitted pattern on top of it. From all the vibrations underneath, and you know, you start to see Paul's hands or someone's, it's either Paul or Gurney's hands, like kind of begin to sink into the sand a little bit because of that vacuum that's underneath them as well.
I put in my notes, and I could be wrong about this, but like, it looks like it turned it into quicksand almost.
Yeah.
It is just like the vibration.
It almost liquefies the sand.
A little bit.
Gives it more water properties.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just think it's like really cool to see, because that looks practical to me.
I don't think
that's necessarily CG.
I could see them doing that.
They probably have like some kind of giant motor underneath that like is doing some amount of shaking or whatever.
I can't even begin to guess like how they would do it, but no. I'm sure they could. That seems like something that's possible.
The way that like the hand is interacting with it seems too real to be CG.
Because we've talked about like the how much trouble graphic artists and CG can get into when they start to replicate sand.
Yeah.
And sand and water, or if they try to do it in practical effects, it can be tough because sand and water do not operate the same at scale, I guess. Like if you try to like use miniatures to do stuff in sand and water, it never looks the same.
Yeah.
That close up shot of their hands is small enough to where they probably could have done that practically and been just fine.
Yeah. I don't know. It's really cool. It's cool to see, you know, how the environment is interacting to this giant worm that is just tearing up the earth beneath them.
Yeah.
We see a moment where Paul is able to kind of like get his shit together, and you know, Gurney gets his shit together. Cut to really, really quickly to Leto inside the cockpit, and you see him kind of do a little bit of maneuvering.
Well, real quick before you continue down that path, yeah. I wonder if the sand is acting kind of like a non-Newtonian fluid at that point.
Oh. Like oobleck?
Sure.
That's when you mix water and corn starch together.
Okay.
And you can like poke it slowly with your finger and it'll go in. But if you try and like punch it, it's like solid.
Well, that kind of looks like what's happening here. Like they're just standing still on the sand and they start to sink. But as soon as they start to run, it seems like kind of normal sand. So maybe that's kind of what it was supposed to portray.
I feel like I need someone a lot smarter than either of us to kind of explain the physics of sand.
I always thought it looked like really slow water.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I don't know, that wasn't in my notes, just a thought that came in my noggin right now.
Sure. Hey, you know, sometimes two brain cells just
that was my
get
one
enough
thought.
Time to just get a single fire of a synapse together, and there you go.
That was my one thought for the day.
Yeah. Well, it was a good one.
I'm glad.
All of today's pressure is gone.
So they are they're making their way back to the ornithopter. Leto flies it real close to them, and they hop in the back. And remember that look that Leto had in the last minute where he said, "Oh shit, we got to get the fuck out of here."
Yeah.
He proceeds to now get the fuck out.
He's
of here.
Now getting the fuck out. and then the ornithopter begins to kind of. As we talked about last episode, because none of this is happening in the books, but they're just kind of circling. We're now caught up to the books where we're just kind of circling overhead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we see Liet Kynes, you know, kind of move to the window, and she's staring out and, you know, begins to pray. And her prayer is, "Bless the maker in his water, bless the coming and going of him. May his passage cleanse the world and keep the world for his people." All of the hises are capitalized.
Of course.
Yeah. As you would do in any other prayer. So several things. One, just a reminder that Dr. Kynes is half Fremen. To her, not only because she is the Imperial planetologist, but because of her heritage, you know, Shai Hulud is incredibly important. And she sees this moment. I'm kind of projecting my thoughts onto her here, but I think she sees this moment as like a massive win for the Fremen. Because it's getting it's getting rid of the external it's getting rid of one piece of the external forces that are taking the planet's resources away from them.
I don't know if I fully agree with that, man, because Stilgar said, "Mind your spice, get out of here, whatever, just don't seek us out." So I don't think he cares what they do with the spice. They have what they need.
Sure.
For it.
But for her as a planetologist, you would assume that she would want to keep the ecology of the planet as
close to natural as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I can see that.
Yeah. But nothing about the sand on Arrakis is natural, though. Is that reading too far ahead?
No.
She's got a point.
She does have a point. Okay, fine. Fuck me then.
And her ultimate goal is to return it back to what it used to be.
The dream of a green Arrakis. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Which we talked about when we were first introduced to Kynes.
Yeah.
And how that's not really a thing yet in the book or in the movie.
No.
Yeah, we don't get that until the second movie, really.
We get it in this movie.
A little bit when...
In their lab later on.
Yeah.
Sure.
But not for a while in this movie.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Tell us your next thought so we can shit on that too.
Yeah.
I really tried to find more context and something else around this prayer that she says. I couldn't find anything about it.
No.
It's in the books. I mean, they these word for word, you know, pulled from the story, but I couldn't find anywhere else where it's mentioned or any other backstory or anything like that. Charlie, I don't know if you have anything.
No, it just is kind of presented as this is what it is. Mm-hmm. You don't need background. Just sort of respect that this is a part of their way of life. And similarly, there's little to no descriptions of what the worm looks like other than
big.
Yeah. I think I was able to pull a total of 3 sentences describing what the worm looks like. And from the book, it says a wide hole emerged from the sand. Sunlight flashed from glistening white spokes within it. The hole's diameter was at least twice the length of the crawler, Paul estimated. He watched as the machine slid into that opening in a billow of dust and sand. The hole pulled back. So all we got was big and spokes.
Big spokes.
Speaking of spokes, so I would assume that's talking about the teeth of Shai-Hulud.
Yes.
Some of the teeth that we see, most of the teeth, I would say, are taller or longer than the crawler was tall.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a big fucking worm. But also, okay, so Chris Knives are the teeth of Shai-Hulud. Which leads me to question, are they like baby teeth that Shai-Hulud sheds as it grows?
Do they break them in half?
Or do they break them in half? Is it sacrilegious to break them?
I don't know. Or do they only use the small ones?
Yeah, I got questions.
I'm going to put on my thinking cap. See if I can get a third or a second thought for the day. The Fremen we know from the books do keep tiny baby worms in captivity for their various uses,
the
water of life, all that jazz. I would have to assume that those are the teeth from the little ones, given the scale that we just saw.
Yeah.
Maybe they do shed them as they grow. I don't know. I don't think we ever get confirmation of that. But
I feel like it would be sacrilegious for them to break a tooth of Shai-Hulud.
Yeah. Also, the Chris knife is just like the first like 6 inches of that tooth.
Yeah.
So it would make more sense to use a small one. So you could have, I don't know, it's not going to be the size of like your hand, you know, 6 inches into the tooth.
Also, all the teeth are probably not uniform. Yeah. Even with the full grown one.
Could be.
Yeah.
Smaller teeth down on the inside.
Because they're modeled after baleen.
Right. I don't know. This is good theories.
These are the thoughts that I have when I'm watching this. Hey, those are really big teeth.
It's
a Chris Omega sword.
I don't know what that means.
just
is that from
huge,
a video game?
No, just a huge
Chris
ass.
Omega sword. Got it. Okay. I don't know. I'm going to throw my hat in the Chris knives we see are baby sandworm teeth.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
That's good headcanon. I'll agree to that.
I think they come from whatever's in the desert.
Just whatever they find around.
Whatever they find around, just little sheddings and maybe pieces of them break off.
Yeah.
And that's what they use? I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't think they come from the babies. Because I don't know that they respect the babies as much as they respect the full-grown ones.
That's fair. Okay. I don't know. We'll never know.
No. Unless we corner that French Canadian somewhere, we're not going to know.
I don't know. I don't even know if he would know. And I don't want to talk to Brian.
No, don't do it. He'll write another book.
No shit. Fuck. Hey, Brian, I got a question. Hold on. Writing a book. Fuck. He doesn't stop.
I think my last little note on this minute was we start to see the sandcrawler just start to dip into the mouth of the worm.
Be consumed.
Yep. And thankfully, Charlotte, we've said this on the show many times, but I think whoever was doing the editing paced out the dialogue in just ever so perfect ways to where it is very few times where we end in the middle of a sentence. It's always like at the end of sentences or, you know, in a good like stopping point, because this minute ends right after we get the last line from Kynes in her prayer.
Nice. I think her prayer ends at like 58 or 59 seconds. It's perfect again, timing. Just
chef's kiss. Beautiful.
Unlike when they edited the litany against fear.
Oh, was that like, do we cut that up a lot?
So litany against fear, I think that minute ended right before "and only I shall remain." Okay. Which is just like the biggest blue balls. It's just like, come on, guys.
Should have anticipated a minute by minute podcast.
I know, right? Here's a, you know.
Why weren't they thinking of us when they made this movie?
Why weren't they thinking of us recording this podcast in 2024 when they made this movie in 2019?
Well, you know, good things take time.
Yeah. So.
My only book notes were the quote that Charlie read. So she literally took the words off my page, which is wonderful. Thank you. we get to see, from what I can remember from the books, we do see Kynes say the same prayer. We see them circling around. So this particular minute was pretty much a scene for scene, I guess, from the books, which is great. He loved to see it.
And it was a magical moment in the theater.
Yeah.
When everybody first got to see
it. Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I kind of looked around and everyone had like the grin of a little kid on their face. It was great.
The only other thing that would have made everyone just like lose their mind in the theater if they added "Father, the sleeper has awakened."
We could not do that and be fine.
But no, just only cut in like... Just do a hard cut to the 84 Lynch just with that, and then just hard cut back to Denis Villeneuve.
God, what movie? There's some, like, I think it's some Star Wars movie that has Bruce Willis from Die Hard as a cameo in the background. What the fuck? Do y'all know about this?
What?
No.
It might not be a Star Wars. I know about
Daniel Craig's cameo.
No, to the point where like it's not actually Bruce Willis. Like they took a clip of him from the movie, just cut around his body, like from the movie Die Hard, and put it into the background of this movie.
No.
I will figure out what it is. It's some movie that I'm sure you've seen. It's a very popular movie.
It's a Star Wars movie?
I think it's a Star Wars movie. Okay. I could be wrong about that.
That would be so... off-putting to just see John McClane.
It's very much in the background. You don't notice it unless you go, what the fuck?
Wait a minute. Do they cut him out or do they cut everything else out?
It's just him. So they integrate him into the background of whatever scene is happening. God. It's just like a weird blink it and you miss. Like there's fucking John McClane in the background of this movie.
That's hilarious.
I would have loved for them to do that, but with Kyle MacLachlan from the 84, just him being a random Fremen, just kind of walking around. That would have been amazing.
I wish they would have asked him if he wanted to be in the movie because he would have 100% been down, I feel like.
I don't know. You think he would have?
In a small role.
Well, no, but there was an interview that someone did with him and they were like, have you seen it? And he's like, no, because it was just like something about not wanting to see, or maybe he did see it, but it was like way later on or whatever, about like trying to separate the two visions that Lynch had versus Villeneuve. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that. I sent you a TikTok that I saw of that interview, but I don't remember exactly what was said. Egg on my face.
Sorry. Is the movie Pearl Harbor?
What? What?
I'm sorry.
What the fuck?
I'm sorry. It is a wounded John McClane from Die Hard is in the background of Pearl Harbor.
What the shit?
I can't show you this computer right now, but I will show you on a little bit.
Okay. What the fuck?
Why?
I don't know.
I wonder if someone had like some contractual agreement that they had to satisfy and they were just like, fuck it, we'll just like take this. And
no, it sounds more like I'm going to do this because I can and no one's ever going to notice.
Yeah.
Because it was a shit movie and why not make it fun, right?
I guess. You're going to leave all that in?
Yeah.
All right, sure. Cool. Into this Dune podcast. Talking about John McClane and Pearl Harbor.
All right. Well, that is all that I had for this minute. Anything else from y'all?
The only other thing, going back to Kynes' prayer with her being half Fremen and everything, you know, blessing the maker and his water. Obviously the water of life is important to everything. Water is important to everything to maintain life because water of life is different. But unless she's talking about the water of life as well.
Well, the maker and his water.
Yeah.
So yes.
Yeah. Water of life.
Come on, dude. Get with the fucking program.
Unless it's the water that just sustains him in general.
Nah.
Isn't water poisonous to him?
I'm going to spit on the ground in front of you. You better spit back.
They drown them in water.
That's true. They do.
No, his water is the water of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck me, I guess.
This episode has been shit on John's ideas.
Aww. Yep. Oh, well.
All right, cool. Well, let's do this again tomorrow.
No, let's not shit on the album. This is the episode I was looking most forward to.
Oh, man, I'm going to cut that part out. If you'd like to get in touch with us to continue to shit on John's ideas,
please don't.
You can reach out to us on Instagram at The Dune Minute. We are on Twitter at Dune Minute. And, of course, an old-fashioned email with duneminute@gmail.com. If you like what you're hearing, please give us a good rating on iTunes. If you don't, just forget I said that. And we will be back tomorrow with another episode of The Dune Minute. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.